Good afternoon, Patriots. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio, broadcasting from Olympia, Washington, brought to you once again by the committee to elect Matt Shea Republican and the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. It's not about right or left. It's about right and wrong. It's about our hope not being in man, but in Jesus Christ. It's about not ending in prayer, but moving to action as well. And it's about Luke 17, 20 through 21. Now, having been questioned by the Pharisees as to when the kingdom of God was coming, he answered them and said, "The kingdom of God is not coming with signs to be observed, nor will they say, 'Look, here it is,' or 'There it is,' for behold, the kingdom of God is in your midst," or some translation, "It is inside you." And that's important to understand, because everywhere we go, we are expanding the kingdom of Jesus Christ, just like the Articles of Confederation of the United Colonies in 1643 wrote, "Whereas we all came into these parts with one and the same aim, to expand the kingdom of Jesus Christ and enjoy the liberties of the gospel and purity with peace." And that is still a covenant today in America. Some people might try to say it's not. I say it is. And I will tell you, folks, in this legislative session, it has been the most anti-Christian session. The sentiments that I'm hearing behind closed doors, some of the things that I'm hearing just among people that have been there for a long time, there is a sense, a shift, where people are just feeling this overt hatred toward Christianity. Now, this started for me, at least, back in October, when some atheists decided to try to come after me. And it wasn't me they were coming after. And for all of you out there in Patriot Radio land, you know what that means. But the fact of the matter is, we must live our Christianity beyond the four walls of the church. We are in a Super Bowl for souls. I asked over the weekend a group of Christians how many had gone out and actually preached the gospel of Jesus Christ. How many had gone out and actually gone to a mission field in a third world country or more close to home, like downtown Spokane? Or how many people had gone and prayed for somebody and seen them healed, or prayed for a miracle and witnessed it happen, or prayed for somebody to be delivered from the struggles and the shackles of addiction and many other things? If you're out there listening right now and you can grasp this idea that the kingdom of Jesus Christ, the temple of the Holy Spirit, when that expands, when we move out beyond the four walls of the church, the devil's kingdom recedes. It's pretty clear in Scripture about this. And some people will say, "Matt, why do you introduce a bill that has no chance of going anywhere? Or why do you, you know, speak about things when maybe there is no chance?" Look, we should not be, as Christians, worried about pragmatism, which is the new dualism. In other words, being double-minded, or the excuse for being double-minded. As Christians, we are called to be the watchman on a wall. Ezekiel 33, where if you're picked to be the watchman on the wall, which we are as Christians, then you need to be crying out the warning. And if you do that, then the punishment, the judgment, doesn't fall on your head. It falls on the head of those people that didn't heed the warning. That's what's important today, to stand on the wall and do the duty. A lot's happening right now. A lot of things are happening in the world, and I'm going to get into that here in a second. But we need to understand it is now. What are you doing now as a Christian, today, as a Christian? Not, Well, you know, after I do this and this, then I'll be ready to do ministry. No. What are you doing today? Are you preaching the gospel today? If we go out beyond the four walls of the church, God will move through us. He will. He will move through us. And you will see a movement of God like we have never seen in our lifetime, like we've never seen in the last 100 years. But we, you, me, need to get out beyond the four walls of the church and make that happen. That's how we change lives. I hope that spurs you to action. There's so many excuses. I've got kids, and I've got soccer practice, and I've got violins, and I got ballet, and I got all these things. No. I understand that, but where is the Lord in that timeline and the fulfillment of the missions that he's given us? And one of the interesting things that I found, if you are actually going out there and doing these things, you actually end up having more time. It's fascinating because you're doing what you're supposed to be doing and not letting the tyranny of the urgent and all the cares and worries of this world choke out the life of the ministry God wants to see come to fruition through you and through me. And look, I learned this a hard way. So I hope that, again, encourages you. I hope you can take that and go out and allow the Lord to change the world through you, through each one of you, through your family. And that brings us now to your daily intelligence briefing. On the international front, the NATO defense chief saying that essentially the NATO force could be used to keep people in line for the New World Order. Well, I thought the New World Order was just a conspiracy theory. It didn't exist. They use it quite frequently for something that doesn't exist. But it tells you where they're headed with this, okay? It just tells you where they're headed. Also on the international front, this coming to us from Debka File in the Middle East, the United States, early Monday morning, bombed Iranian sites on the Syrian-Iraqi border. Debka saying that was a reprisal for Iran's bid to attack the U.S. base in Iraq. So things are heating up in the Middle East right now. This comes on the heels of what it was alleged to be three Iranian missiles that were posted ready to strike the big U.S. Ain al-Assad air base in Anbar province, which is the province bordering Syria in Iraq. Okay? And these attacks were allegedly going to be launched by one of the pro-Iranian Iraqi militias in coordination with this, so the U.S. bombed these sites. Either way, the justifications need to be borne out, but either way, looking at the Middle East, it looks like things are going to heat up here pretty quick. Also on the international front, this a little bit stunning, but this coming to us from WorldNet Daily. Catholics in China already are perplexed by a secret deal the Vatican has made with Beijing, and now Pope Francis has told Chinese bishops that they should show loyalty to the communist regime. You heard this. I mean, look at some of the most severe persecution in the entire world is coming against the Christian church in China right now, and Pope Francis is telling Chinese bishops they should show loyalty to the communist regime? Obviously raising a lot of questions. And here's the quote, the Pope urged, quote, all the bishops to renew their total adherence to Christ and to the church. And then went on, as members of the Chinese people, they are obliged to show respect and loyalty to the civil authorities. To the extent they are not violating God's law. That's what Romans 13 says. That we're subject to the highest authorities. In other words, the highest authority is God, is Jesus Christ. And if a magistrate underneath that is violating that law, we have a duty, actually, to resist that. That's where Peter, they resisted civil authorities. Paul resisted. John the Baptist lost his head over resisting civil authorities because they weren't following God's law. This is the kind of thing that confuses the Christian church. You know, I heard a story about a pastor who was saying that if there was a law, okay, that said that he had to turn in his guns, that he would actually do it, despite the fact that that could lead to all kinds of horrendous bloodshedding crimes. And this same pastor said that if somebody broke into his house and was going to rape his wife, that he would allow that to occur. My question, and another pastor actually asked this question, I think it was Pastor Chuck Baldwin actually, does your wife know that? I think there'd be a little bit of a different answer. I mean, look at this. You cannot be complicit in sin. I'd been told a story by one of the Ukrainian pastors that during World War II, when the Nazis were coming through, they're killing all the men, they were raping the women, and some of these Christian villages, they were not fighting back. They were pacifist. And eventually, some of the Christian villages says, we have to fight back because otherwise we are now becoming complicit in what these crimes are. And that's exactly right. That's why the temple of the Holy Spirit, the temple in ancient Jewish times, had guards. The temple of the Holy Spirit in modern times has the right to bear arms. It's why this is habit. It's worth protecting. Very important to understand this. So this is a little bit disturbing article from WorldNet Daily. All right. Also on the international front, continued pushes and little overtures by Turkey that they are going to be declaring the caliphate, that Erdogan is going to be declared the caliph, and that Turkey's going to be the new caliphate. Now, remember, back in 1924, the Ottoman Turks ended the caliphate. 1928, Hassan al-Banna created the Muslim Brotherhood to reestablish the caliphate. So Turkey is getting ready to do this. Just unreal. And they keep doing these little overtures. So keep your eye on the Middle East and particularly on Turkey. All right. Also on the international front, out of Venezuela, Juan Guaido declared the president, or the official leader of Venezuela. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here in the next couple of weeks. We may see a full-blown civil war down there. I mean, there already really kind of is one. Although small scale. Also on the international front, Britain looks like it's going to be doing a no-deal Brexit. Looks like it's going to happen, a no-deal Brexit coming March 30th, or March 29th, actually. And corresponding with an event we're going to be doing here in Olympia, the Lexit, the Liberty State exit of Washington State on the same day. So look for more information on that coming up. Also have a rally here in Olympia on the 15th of February in regards to the right to bear arms. And folks, if you can't make any rally, make that one. It's huge. And check out for the details. It's going to be on the Capitol steps on the 15th. Check out the details online. And if you need help with it, you can always message me on Facebook as well. All right. Also on the international front, an Irish priest denies communion to a pro-abort politician in Ireland. Well, now, Bishop Daly doing a couple of great things in Spokane, saying that pro-abort politicians in Spokane can't get communion. Bishop Daly coming out just last Friday and saying that. And then, as well, it looks like Ben Shapiro, the ban on Ben Shapiro at Gonzaga University, has been rescinded. Also, looking like Bishop Daly has weighed in there as well. Thank God for that. We have a bishop in Spokane, Washington, leading the way. Great job. Very, very encouraging. All right. Also on the national front, let's go down to this Virginia governor talking about letting babies die after birth. Look, that's the logical conclusion of this stuff. Logical conclusion of it. Logical conclusion of this culture of death. And it just has to end. We have to abolish abortion. We need to abolish abortion. It is a great shame, as Rabbi Jonathan Kahn talks about. It's the spirit of Baal, the spirit of Ashereth, and the spirit of Molech. And he's absolutely right. I mean, they used to sacrifice kids, and it's the same language, the same reasoning that's used for convenience, sexual immorality, the worship of Ashtoreth, particularly on that last one. All right. And if you don't know about it, just go look it up. He's got a great outline of this. Rabbi Jonathan Kahn talking about how these principalities keep showing up throughout history. All right. Also, on the regional front, a couple of issues. House Bill 1771, House Bill 1638. Look, on this Friday, February, I believe, 8th, this Friday coming up, there's a hearing in the House of Representatives in the Healthcare Committee on mandatory vaccines. Now, I want to talk about this briefly, but because, look, there was also this universal home visit bill introduced, $38 million to do this, right? Voluntary government bureaucrats coming, Washington bureaucrats, coming into your home. But it's just voluntary, of course, for now. Coming into your home when you have your newborn. And then what happens? What if you haven't given them a vaccine? Is that going to be cause for CPS to come in? If you're a Christian, they see a cross on the wall. Is it going to be cause for CPS to come in? They see things in the house that may not be up to code. Is that a cause to be fined? I mean, folks, this is getting, it's quite candidly getting creepy. But we need to understand, too, that these two things go together. This mandatory vaccination and these universal home visits, this stuff goes together. You're introduced only a couple days apart, number one. Number two, this is not coincidence that that kind of thing happens. They are very coordinated at the introduction of these bills. Now, mandatory vaccinations. I don't care where you stand on the efficacy of vaccines, whether you think vaccines work or that you think that they don't work. Now, the flu vaccine, you should check out the actual facts on that and the efficacy rate on that, because it's very clear that the flu vaccine is not what it's purported to be. But mandatory vaccinations, this issue was decided at the Nuremberg trials. It was decided at the Nuremberg trials that a human being has the right, the absolute unalienable right, to decide what goes into their bodies. Okay? And the fact that they want to give people this kind of Hobson's choice goes against everything we believe in, whether you believe that vaccines are efficacious or not. There has to be a choice, because if you believe otherwise, where does it end? Where does the government agents stop telling you what you can put in your body or mandating what you can put in your body? Where does that end? That's why this issue was settled at Nuremberg, because this was the logical conclusion of that worldview. You don't have room for any other. There is no room there. And I've heard all these arguments out there. And, you know, listen, if these vaccines are so good, then why are you afraid of people that are not vaccinated? Number one. Number two, every time I have seen bureaucrats through the structure of government force people to do something, every time it has ended up being wrong. And I challenge you. If you think that people should be forced to do this, that you are adopting the worldview of the communists, of the National Socialists, because that is what they believe, because you don't have bodily integrity anymore, and then they can make an excuse for just about anything that you have to put into your body. And I don't think we want to go there. I really don't. And that's why there were a lot of people in the Slavic Church that fled the former Soviet Union that refused to be vaccinated because they knew what happened in the former Soviet Union. Understand this, okay? It's very, very important. Your worldview has to be consistent on this issue. All right, let's go next to what's happening here in Olympia. Gun bills passed out of committee last Friday, these anti-gun bills. So the magazine ban passed out, five-day reporting, and several others are it's just terrible. There's a ghost gun bill that they're kind of working on some amendatory language with. This is why you need to be here on the 15th. You got to get here on the 15th. We need to show them, just like 1,200 hairdressers and cosmetologists and nail technicians showed up here in Olympia and changed the course of the legislature. We have to have the same thing for gun rights. Folks, it is great, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later today, that sheriffs are reclaiming their rightful place. That is awesome. And the number of counties that we're seeing now, that is terrific. But the fact is, it has to be the people, too, backing up the sheriffs on maintaining these constitutional boundaries. It has to be the people as well. It's our responsibility as the people. Actually, it's our authority as the people. All right, also introduced a bill to, it's actually a House Joint Memorial, to rescind the Article 5 conventions of Washington State from 1903, 1909, and 1963. Clean up our books. So there's absolutely no question about that issue. And then lastly, on the local front, Yakima, you might want to get a pen and paper for this one, okay, folks? Yakima is going to have a Liberty State meeting, their very first Liberty State meeting. They're going to be meeting on February 8th. This is Friday, this coming Friday at 7 p.m., February 8th, 7 p.m., That gives them enough time to go to Olympia and help testify on the vaccination issue, and then they can come back. So February 8th, 7 p.m., you're going to be meeting at 221 North 1st Street in Yakima. 221 North 1st Street in Yakima. They have up on Facebook an event that they're sharing, 7 p.m. Be there. It's the first Yakima County meeting, and these are spreading all over the place. It's so, so awesome to see this happening. Really, really cool. I love it. All right. That now is the briefing. And remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that's been praying for us. And please stay informed. Check out the Facebook page. I post a ton there. If you want to know what's happening in the world, you can go there. And also, you need to listen to people like my next guest, Glenn Morgan of We the Governed. Glenn, thanks for joining me once again on Patriot Radio. It's great to have you on.
Matt, thank you so much for having me. It's always great to be here.
So you've been pretty busy, and normally, you know, the west side of the state keeps you pretty occupied, but there's an individual in eastern Washington that's kind of bringing a lot of attention on himself, and it's Ben Stuckert. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about what's happening with Ben?
Yeah, sure. I'd love to. And in fact, I also wrote an article about this recently on my website, We the Governed. And I noticed the spokesman review, Sue Lonnie Matson, did a great job putting up an article on this just recently on Saturday as well. And what it has to do with is that Ben Stuckert's a Spokane city councilman. He's president, actually. I think of the Spokane city council right now. And last year in particular, he lobbied and was pushing for a local campaign finance regime in the city of Spokane, which is not a good policy idea. He was imitating Seattle, and generally, anytime you want to imitate Seattle, the answer should be default no. But he was trying to imitate the way Seattle set up something like this, which is to add a whole nother layer of bureaucracy when you decide to run for office. New rules, new restrictions, things like that. And so he was really pushing it as a campaign finance reformer. This law got passed by the city council last year in February. It was actually vetoed by the mayor, and then the council overruled, and it went into effect this last month, January. And then Ben Stuckert promptly was the first person to actually break his own law that he passed. So I filed a complaint with the Public Disclosure Commission, And what he did was he actually worked with the local Spokane Firefighters Union, who's pushing for, they're supporting a property tax increase on February 12th that's going to be on the ballot. And they did a mailer, a large mailer that he was actually involved. He and his aide, a guy named Adam McDaniel, actually wrote this mailer up, and it prominently featured Stuckert on the front with his photo and a quote, which they mailed out to about 30,000 people in the city of Spokane. And the reason why that's a violation of the law is that it there was a recent court case by the Attorney General's office against a Snohomish County judge who did something almost identical 2 years ago named Cindy Larson. And it was found that by basically taking your image and putting it on a flyer of an unrelated campaign, but basically mailing it to the same voters who are going to be voting for you, that's what they call an in-kind contribution to your own campaign. And that's what he did. And he knowingly did this. And it was sent out far and wide. And it, the value of that is greatly in excess of what the very limits were that he had said, that there was $500 limits per election, total of $1,000 that he had said, and said that's as much as anybody should get in the city of Spokane. And this mailer was well in excess of that. And the firefighters had already given him a maximum donation anyway. So the public disclosure has that right. Commission has that complaint right now. And he's, Mr. Stuckert's trying to respond to that and trying to claim that he didn't do anything wrong. But I think the facts speak for themselves. And I actually used the language that the Attorney General's office and the AG drafted in the Cindy Larson case. It's the identical language because the same. It's just the same set of facts, different names, and different quantities of mailers. And it's basically the same exact issue. So that's the that was an interesting thing out of the city of Spokane. And conveniently, while they were at it, the firefighters also broke the law by failing to disclose their top five donors. The one donor they did not disclose was actually Ben Stuckert's L.A., Adam McDaniel, same guy I mentioned earlier, who contributed over $1,000 worth of in-kind contributions, and they failed to disclose that, which is probably not an accident because they don't necessarily want people to know just how close, you know, a couple of elected officials are to this property tax increase. And so, you know, Mr. Stuckert's trying to claim that he didn't break any laws, but he clearly did. You know, a lot of this has to do with just not, you know, pushing a law that you think is only going to apply to other people and not really thinking it applies to yourself.
And I think that that's kind of the point here, right? You know, it's yeah. Always, it always seems to be that whether we're talking property rights or you're talking global, you know, the so-called global warming crisis, or you're talking guns or whatever, it's always this standard, you know, hey, you guys can't have any guns, but we'll have an armed security detail, right? We passed this law, but maybe it doesn't apply to me, right? You see that quite a bit.
Exactly. It you know, you see it all the time. And I think that oftentimes it's because people by default judge their own actions by their intentions, and they assign nefarious intentions on everyone else. And so they just assume, you know, Mr. Stuckert doesn't like, based on the things that he has said publicly and published over the last few years, you know, he clearly thinks that businesses and evil corporations are a potential threat to his political career. And so he's trying to impose all these rules to restrict anybody who could ever potentially challenge him politically. And that's really the objective and goal largely of most campaign finance laws, is to help incumbents make it more difficult for challengers. That's what he's doing. Once he's in the city council, he wants to make it easier for his mayoral race, which he's on the ballot this year, running for mayor of Spokane. And so he's trying to, meanwhile, at the same time, he's trying to use every advantage he can as the incumbent and his other contacts with the firefighters and others to use their resources, which are almost unlimited, and to get his name out there to help him in his own reelection.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And then, you know, but, oh, it was just an innocent mistake. You guys are trying to make a big deal out of it and politicize this, right? When it was already politicized, right? I mean, come on.
Right. It was politicized from the beginning. And, you know, the fascinating thing, and this has been something you and I have talked about for a couple of years here, when I've discussed some of I've been kind of on an ongoing crusade here about the Public Disclosure Commission and campaign finance laws in general. And I filed about 428 complaints so far over the last couple of years, which is actually a pretty big number. But a lot of this is really looking at whether people are treated equally, whether somebody who's considered a conservative gets treated the same way that somebody who's considered a leftist gets treated. And that isn't always the case. I mean, I think sometimes the you know, they're going to be treated the same, but you also see cases that really stand out where there's a substantial aggressive, zealous enforcement, like what you see happening to Tim Iman or what you see happening to that the Grant County prosecutor case from 2014 that the AG's after, or even to some local, you know, smaller races where it looks like somebody's a Democrat's going to get away with breaking that law, and somebody's Republican, if they break almost the same law, they get treated much harsher. And, you know, by building up, I think, a data set that, that demonstrates this disparity, I think it's useful just for people to know what's going on. And the one thing I do find, and we've had a discussion before, is that there's a lot of problems with the campaign finance laws. They are desperate need of reform. I think some good reform came out last year in the bill that you were involved in HB 2938, which did take away some of the ridiculous types of violations. But, you know, we just continue to find more challenges with it. And the more the bureaucrats and the politicians want to keep jumping in and adding layers of bureaucracy to this, the outcome is never really good for anybody except for those who are in power and think they can manipulate it to their own ends. And, you know, and related to that, I, obviously, as a guy who's filed a lot of complaints, I've had my fair share, too. In fact, I set a new state record where last year I had over 45 complaints filed on me in 1 week by a lot of our good friends on the left and Fuse and all kinds of these groups. And they were infuriated when the PDC threw them all out or dismissed them all 2 weeks ago. And they were just infuriated about that. And yet, when I was trying to explain to them, you know, that they believed that the law shouldn't apply to them and they should only apply to other people. And yet the law is written in a certain way. And I didn't break the law. And the PDC even agreed with me. And I'm sure that that was not an easy thing for them to write. It just simply illustrates, you know, some of the challenges I think that exist with this campaign finance laws. And, you know, it's something we have to watch because I think it's a type of law that gets manipulated and used to abuse people who are new to the political process and who are trying to basically change, I think, the incumbencies or the, you know, the established powers that are in office right now.
Yeah. And I think that's a great segue into this weird situation over in San Juan County. Now, people always say, Matt, you read too much into things. That stuff can never really happen. Then it always ends up happening. You know, maybe not right then, but maybe in a year from that, you know, 2 years. And people say, wow, how did you know? You know? And I've always kind of wondered if this could ever have happened in a courtroom. So if you could tell the listeners what's going on in San Juan County, because it's unbelievable.
It is. And absolutely. And thank you so much for that. Yeah, bringing this up, because this is a story. It's just started to break over this last weekend. And a little bit of a background on it, San Juan County, small county, just of the islands, you know, Friday Harbor, you kind of think of these little islands out in Puget Sound, beautiful place. And it is, it's beautiful out there, but it's a very much a leftist haven. It's votes Democrat the same way Seattle does, basically. And the prosecutor and the sheriff there have had a string of controversies surrounding their behavior in office that's been very abusive towards the constitutional freedoms and liberties that we would normally expect that people in these positions would respect. The prosecutor's name is Randy Gaylord, and the sheriff is Krebs. His last name is Krebs. And recently in a courtroom on Friday, they had a guy who was in there. It was a criminal trial, jury trial, and he was in there for criminal trespass, he had long criminal history, wasn't a good guy, but he had, but also wasn't a major case. It was just a fairly minor case of criminal trespass and a guy just being obnoxious. The judge that was actually on the in the courtroom at the time noticed, because she was trying to learn what the security cameras in the courtroom were looking at. She happened to pull them up on the screen and noticed that they were zooming in on juror notes in the jury box, and also zooming in. One of them was also zooming in on the defense counsel notes while he was representing his client. This is live in the courtroom. And she caught that, and good for her. It's not a judge who I particularly like, but good for her. She was honest, pointed it out. They pulled a records request immediately, go back and look at the videos. And it turned out that throughout the course of this trial, somebody in the county prosecutor's office or the sheriff's office or the combined were actually manipulating the security cameras to read the notes on the jury's the notebooks that the various jurors were holding, and also the defense counsel, what they were writing down on their notes. And the judge that was hearing the case immediately threw it out with prejudice, saying that the state could not come back and prosecute this guy ever again declared that the state had committed nefarious acts and basically threw it out. And that was just reported in a very leftist, you know, newspaper, the San Juan Journal, just reported on Saturday. And the repercussions of this are still continuing because, of course, the question remains, how many years has the prosecutor's office and or sheriff's office been manipulating security cameras to throw criminal trials or other civil cases? Who knows what they've been doing with it over the years? And so I'm involved in making sure we file a spoliation notice so they don't destroy the records. And we try to get to the bottom of this. But this is just the latest in kind of a series of drama of a sheriff and a prosecutor both who are significantly out of control and greatly need to be reined in and could only operate in this fashion because of the dominance of the Democratic Party there, and that you can't that nobody's been able to bounce these guys out of office lately. So, and they just both got reelected last year.
It's almost incredible. And that kind of behavior actually puts in jeopardy so many cases where the people might actually be guilty, but then they get let out of jail. I mean, you're talking, it could have involved rapists and murderers. I mean, this could be something that has effects we can't even imagine, especially on victims' families. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. And in this, you know, I think that this case, when you look at the fact pattern of the case that was being held, you know, before the jury, the fellow was not a good guy. He was a bad guy. He'd been arrested and had a criminal history of many things. I mean, he wasn't a murderer or anything at that scale, but I mean, he was still a bad guy. And it does appear to me that he probably was guilty of what he was being charged with, but it doesn't matter. You still have to follow the rules and the law. And if you're unwilling to respect that, a fair trial as a prosecutor in a sheriff's office in that capacity, my God, your community is just in total jeopardy because there are a lot of probably very righteous convictions that are going to have to probably be overturned. People be unleashed back on the streets. Beyond that, the credibility of your office and the very questionable nature of some of these convictions probably weren't necessarily going to happen. And you've manipulated in a very dishonest way the system and the trust that people have put in you. And I think this story, if you haven't heard this before now, you're going to be hearing a lot more about it as time goes by. And I'll be writing a story about it pretty soon, just digging into the history, because this prosecutor was the same prosecutor who sued Seattle talk show host a couple years ago and attempting to silence their ability to speak about an initiative on the air. And in the end, the state Supreme Court overruled and sided with the talk show hosts, Kirby Wilbur and John Carlson. But this was a prosecutor who led that charge. And so you'll find that when somebody's willing to violate the Constitution, like the First Amendment or the Second Amendment, they're willing to pretty much violate everything. It's at least that's the pattern of behavior I see here. And this example from over the weekend just further supports that.
Yeah, it really clearly looks that way. And so, yeah, keep us up to date on what's going on over there. And also, you know, this is the kind of thing that spurs attorneys to start looking in their own area if something similar is happening in their own area. So keep us up to date on that. I want to shift gears a little bit right now. Glenn Morgan with We the Governed. We have nothing short of sheriffs reclaiming their rightful place as the chief law enforcement officer in a county and saying, we took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, Constitution of the State of Washington. We are not going to enforce a law that is unconstitutional, specifically talking about I-1639 and this gun control push that has been out there. What is your view of this? Because now, I mean, it seems like I think only Ponderay County, at least in our area, has not weighed in on this. But a lot of Eastern Washington County sheriffs have said, nope, we're not going to enforce this. It's actually kind of refreshing. Tell the listeners about what your reaction is to that and why you think this maintenance of the boundaries, these jurisdictional boundaries, is so critical to maintaining our republic.
I'll tell you, I think it's particularly important because the sheriffs are basically showing the importance of the oath that he took to uphold the Constitution and the clear unconstitutional problems that exist with 1639. And I'm going to tell you, since I was in the debates on against 1639, before some of the editorial boards and with some of the supporters of 1639 at the time, I can tell you it was just astounding how dishonest the other side was in representing this. And as you've seen the legislature recently, how they pretend, you know, they were claiming this is as far as we need to go, but of course we all know it isn't. They immediately, they get one bite at the apple, then they want to eat the whole thing and take away your guns entirely. We knew that was going to happen. They're doing it right now. And I think that even some of them even acknowledged at times, well, there may be a constitutional problem with it. They figured, let's just try to do it anyway, and maybe we can get away with it. That's been their attitude frequently, and this is me face to face with these guys. So the now their demeanor, of course, as now they're shocked that some of these sheriffs are willing to actually stand up for the Constitution and not enforce what is on its face a clear violation of the Second Amendment, the way that this law is existing, of course, the way they want to try to enforce it. And it isn't just a violation of the Second Amendment. It's got other violations in there, especially related to the safe storage and the fact that you can go to prison or jail or at least become a felon based on what somebody else might do with something they steal from you. By the way, if they can do that with your guns, they can do that with your car. They can do that with something else they steal from your house. And it's also a ridiculous slippery slope that is entirely created by, you know, just horrible policy and bad, you know, of course, we know that their objectives are terrible in the first place, but the policy itself is bad as well. And I'm glad to see some of these sheriffs standing up for the Constitution. We need more people to do that. There's quite a few on the west side now that are also stepping forward doing the same thing. So I think that you're going to find that, you know, obviously the sheriff that I just explained in San Juan County, he probably loves the idea of seizing firearms. He certainly seems to. And look at the other types of things that guy does. So I think you're going to see that the good sheriffs, this is one of those times when you can really identify who they are. And I think it's important to stand behind sheriffs when they're willing to do that.
Absolutely. And I think the important part, too, is it's not just sheriffs standing alone. The people have to be standing as well. We the governed, right? We have both a responsibility and an authority to maintain our republic, and not just voting or working on somebody's campaign, but I'm talking actually building relationships, showing up in Olympia, being involved in this political process. And we can see how just even one person can completely change the direction of the state.
Absolutely. And, you know, I mean, one of the things that I have tried to do over the years, and I say this not because other people need to try to do the same thing. I think you need to find the area that you as an activist or a citizen activist can be involved in and make a difference. Find the one that fits you and fits your personality. But I try to go out and expose the truth about what's going on to the widest audience possible. And I write it on my own website because they can't take that away from me very easily. Anybody can see it. I put up a lot of source documents so that if you don't think I'm telling the truth or you're suspicious of it, you can download the original documents yourself and look at them and make your own judgment. And the purpose of that isn't just to share it amongst ourselves and those who share our views, but it's to get it out there to the widest audience possible and for people to, you know, that if they say that's not happening, now you have something you can share with them that's factual, it's not theoretical, it's not based on rumors or speculation. It's really, it lays it out there with photos and evidence, and I think that it's a powerful tool. It's easy for people to dismiss something if it's not in front of them, or they can't read it, and they may still try to dismiss it. But you wear down the resistance of those who are trying to deny what's actually happening around them when you can provide this in an effective and sometimes entertaining way, but at least in a way that they can see it and then vet it if they want. And I think that that's become a really powerful tool for me to use. And I think it's what we have to do. The tame media is not going to do this for us.
No, they're not. And though it is a responsibility of the people, and the media just seems not to put out a lot of things that should matter to the folks, but they do definitely, at least in my opinion, follow a specific agenda. And I want to talk about an agenda. We're starting to see it in Spokane, Washington. Huge homeless problem. In Spokane, Washington, I had Phil Altmaier from Union Gospel Mission on here a little while back. This seems to be a created problem, but you've been detailing what I think you call one of the great environmental disasters, and it's happening in Olympia. Tell the listeners a little bit about Olympia and what's been going on.
Well, so Olympia and its infinite wisdom decided to put – they've always had a problem with – homeless folk coming into Olympia. And what I think homeless is really the wrong term to use here, because we attach a certain, you know, somebody down on their luck or something's happened to them, they don't have a place to stay. What Olympia has done is decided to recruit drug addicts, as many drug addicts as they possibly can. And it's actually a group called Olympia Solidarity, which is based in Evergreen State College, of course. And they hand out these flyers and they distribute them all over the nation, Detroit, Chicago, Atlanta, all over the country, San Francisco. And they convince people that the best place to be a drug addict and homeless, which usually goes hand in hand, is Olympia, because they sell the fact that it's low incarceration rates, that they can't get you out of your tents, that there's free stuff, lots of food, tents, needles, everything's free. And so you can come out here and it's a, you know, it's a drug addict's paradise. And they, I have a copy of one of these flyers that they hand out. And this is not just Olympia. It's happening in Seattle. It's happening everywhere. But in Olympia, that's the group that's leading the charge. And so what happened is they had all these homeless people. They thought they'd build a camp downtown, an officially sanctioned camp. That was their theory. Because after all, if you want something to go away, you subsidize it and make it easier. And instead, of course, the predictable outcome was that instantly this camp was filled with hundreds now of new addicts coming into town. They got free tents, everything's free, free Wi-Fi, free warming center, free food. And it immediately turned into just a crazy no-go zone. And, you know, the very intelligent people that run the city of Olympia located this homeless camp right next to the farmer's market, which is gone now, right next to the Hands on Children's Museum. And parents were getting terrorized trying to bring their kids there. And right next to the transit center, so that somebody trying to wait to catch a bus could watch the drug deals and the fights and the garbage being dumped out on the street across the way. Now, the city would provide dumpsters, but the drug addicts aren't going to take their stuff to the dumpsters. They just throw it on the ground, even if it's right next to the dumpsters. And so instantly, this downtown Olympia really turned into a really ugly place. And it wasn't just there. There were so many homeless people that couldn't fit all into that place, the drug addicts. And some of them don't like being that close to each other because they rob each other and they have all the other problems. So they were spreading out into the green spaces of Olympia, including Percival Creek, which goes between Black Lake and Capitol Lake. Capitol Lake is the big pond there, the reflecting pond that's built below the state capitol. And Percival Creek was a salmon recovery. You know, it was a salmon stream. It genuinely has a salmon run. They spent millions of dollars, your taxpayer dollars, to enhance this whole creek so that salmon could run down. Only now it's so infested with homeless and addict camps for a mile and a half, and they're dumping their garbage right at the creek. They are shooting up right next to the creek, throwing their needles in it, pumping water from the creek. Anybody that's familiar with the Hearst decision, I mean, it's just, it's an unbelievable scenario. And yet, of course, where we live and where other people live, you know, they want you to be 200 feet back from the creek, but there the homeless there and the addicts are just using it as a human waste place.
You know, we don't want to see that in Spokane. What do you think should be the solution to this? I mean, it should be pretty simple. And I know Phil Altmaier had his, you know, his ideas, but what are your ideas about solving something like this?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is stop all the freebies. And no needles, no safe injection sites, no free tents. None of that stuff should be given to anybody, because that encourages the drug addicts to decide to pick your place versus some other place. And there, unfortunately, are going to be a lot of progressive havens in the country, San Francisco being one of them. If they want all that stuff, they should go there, not come to our towns. So get rid of all those, because as soon as you do that, a lot of problems greatly do go away. Your drug addiction problems go away. The drug dealers have fewer customers. And the crime drops because the druggies are not stealing. They're not having to steal as much to support their habit. And they leave. That's number one. Number two is you're going to have some people who genuinely are having problems. There's a Salvation Army facility here in Olympia. And the beds are oftentimes empty at night because they have a standard of behavior that they require people to adhere to before they can actually use their facilities. And the drug addicts don't want to follow that, and they don't need to because they have all these other options out there. But I think that that's the way to help. You have standards of behavior, you have testing, and you get people into addiction treatment plans. And when I was debating the nonprofit groups that were planning to get millions of dollars and are getting millions of dollars now in homeless grants from the city of Olympia, and they had a tax increase to do this, and I was opposed to that tax increase, and I was debating them. And I was talking about how you can't subsidize bad behavior and you can't enable bad behavior. Anybody that's ever been around a drug addict knows that if you enable that bad behavior, it isn't going to go away. It actually, you prolong the misery that those people are in. And I think it's an immoral action. And I was ridiculed as by this guy right in front of the, it was the Olympian editorial board at the time. I was ridiculed as an old-fashioned view that had been discredited long ago, and it was something that came out of the religious right, and therefore it, of course, couldn't be right, and that's just wrong. And it was, and what my prediction at the time was that this place was just going to explode with drug addicts and homelessness, and I didn't think it would happen as fast as it did, but it did, and that'll happen in Spokane and any other city that tries to go down this road. These groups. Homeless industrial complex, they push all these theories and plans and programs so they can get as much money as possible, and they don't make the problem go away. They don't solve the problem. They just make the problem worse.
They always do make the problem worse. More government. If you subsidize something, you're going to have more of it. And whether that's bureaucrats or camps, you subsidize it, you're going to have more of it. It's held true. Somebody told me that a long, long time ago, and it has held true throughout my entire tenure in the legislature. And anyway, I want to – Tim did not ask me to do this. I want to say that up front. But I've been really concerned about the treatment of Tim Iman, and I think a lot of listeners out there don't know what's happening to Tim Iman. And I think it would be good for them to hear it because these folks ultimately want to do that to all of us. And I think that just taking his particular case should spur us to action. So if you can, tell the listeners a little bit about Tim's plight right now dealing with the Attorney General.
Sure. And, you know, Tim right now is being sued by the Attorney General's office. They are attempting to fine him $2.1 million and then impose another $3 to $4 million on them of their own attorney's costs. And they've been aggressively going after him since 2012 because of two different transactions that they say he should have reported on some campaign finance reports and that he says that he didn't need to report. Now, whether he needed to or not, normally the solution in cases like this is that, okay, if you've committed a violation, then even if you disagree with it, if in the end the AG wins, you pay a fine, you move on. I have personally forced the AG to file 19 of these different lawsuits. Some of them far more egregious as far as the nature of the violation, but they're similar in a lot of ways. And normally they just settle them with a fine and you move on. And in Tim's case, unique in the state of Washington, the Attorney General decided to go on the scorched earth, very malicious prosecution structure where it was not about whether what he did was wrong or not, as much as it was about how can we destroy him in the discovery process and how can we destroy him by tying up his attorneys. And so they've filed 800 different motions back and forth over the last year and a half. It's racked up. It's completely bankrupted Tim. He's had to file a bankruptcy, Chapter 11 protection, because it isn't possible for somebody to be able to withstand the largest law firm in the state of Washington, which is the Attorney General's office, coming down on you with the full force of the state, filing every ridiculous possible motion they could. And now he's lost counsel because once he went into bankruptcy, he doesn't have any debt that he owes to anybody, except now the state has this huge potential bill hanging over his head. So as a creditor in bankruptcy court, they have the right to intervene and say, listen, we don't like his attorneys. So we think his attorneys are bad and he can't use these attorneys. And they forced Tim to lose his attorney, legal counsel. So now he's continuing on with no legal counsel, bankrupt. And this is entirely a scorched earth effort to destroy his life. And all Tim, you know, beyond the fact of whether he violated a couple of minor campaign finance laws, that's totally insignificant in this case, because this is really about destroying Tim for having the temerity to reduce our taxes over the last, you know, 20 years. And filing his initiatives, which very much were opposed by the establishment, both bureaucracy and elected officials, especially Democrats, who always want to raise taxes. Here was a guy who's been quite successful. If you look at how his initiatives, they've actually saved taxpayers in Washington State, including taxpayers in Spokane, $40 billion. And that's one man out there running initiatives. I don't care if you like him or you don't like him. That's what he's accomplished. And that's what they don't like, and that's the threat, and therefore Ferguson has just decided to, unique in all cases I've ever seen Ferguson pursue for anything else, has decided to harass Tim Iman and harass Republicans associated with him just because he can, because he thinks he can get away with it.
$40 billion that could have been used for more gun control, could have been used for whatever other schemes were out there. I think that's a really, really important point there. One guy who said, no, not on my watch, and stood up and decided to do something about it. Glenn, in the last 2 minutes that we've got right now, if you could plug We the Govern, tell people where they can go find out more information, and more importantly, what they should be doing to help maintain the Republic.
And thank you so much. As always, I appreciate, Matt, the opportunity to be on the show and your listeners. And I support, I really appreciate any support they have. If you can go to wethegovern.com, it's easy to find on the website. Type it into any of the search engines, you'll see it. And if you could just, if you want to support me, you can donate to me there. If you want to just get my emails, I'm on Facebook, but I'm always suspicious that Facebook in the end is going to take me off. So sign up for my emails so that you get those. I don't spam you. I just send out the articles automatically. Will go out the next morning that I write the day before. And just stay in touch, stay involved, and share, please, the stories that I've written. Share them with others, because these are things that you're not going to see covered in the regular media. And I just encourage people, do not be afraid. Stand up. It's amazing what you can do if you're willing to stand up. And be smart about it. Do it in groups. Try to find other like-minded folk. But pick your issue, pick your passion, focus on it, expose the truth, become a subject matter expert on it, and make sure you're not afraid to share that information to the widest possible audience.
Amen. Glenn Morgan from We the Govern, thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. I really appreciate everything you're doing. And keep us up to date, especially with the new developments that may happen in San Juan County.
Thank you so much, Matt.
Yeah, absolutely. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio today. And make sure if you miss this, you can go to the podcast on iTunes or Podbean, the replay at 9 o'clock on the ACN network as well. Get involved. Stand on the line. It's the time for us to make freedom happen. God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.